Good morning, everybody. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio on October 28th, 2020. It's a pleasure to have you here. We're going to have a wonderful show. We've got a conversation all lined up with Angelica Infante Green, who is the Commissioner of Elementary and Secondary Education in the great state of Rhode Island. It's going to be a pleasure to have her here. I've got to thank my good friends over at CCSSO, the Council of Chief State School Officers, for helping me set this up. She is a national leader in educational equity, and I have to say this, congratulations to her. She is the first Latina and the first woman of color to lead the Rhode Island Department of Education, and that is saying something. So Angelica will be here in just a few minutes, and I'm trying to pronounce your first name right, Angelica, so you'll tell me if I'm doing a good job or not. We're going to head to Rhode Island, little old Rhode Island today, but first let me do just a little bit of homework. Of course, we are the American Consortium for Equity in Education. That's why I love saying that she's such a national leader in educational equity. Okay, ACE. ed.org, ACE-ED.org. Our initials match the website, American Consortium for Equity in Education, ACE-ED.org. Please, all educators are invited to go over there and sign up and be with us. It's all free. We have our wonderful magazine over there, which is called Equity in Access, and we house all our podcasts over there as well. And you'll see a huge not huge, but you can see it, an icon for a podcast. So you can check all that out. Again, join with us, okay? We love it over at ace-ed.org. We want to make your voice heard. We tweet at EduTalk Radio, and LinkedIn is my name, Larry Jacobs, and Facebook is A. Larry Jacobs, or you can also go to Education Talk Radio. That's where we get the information out about our shows, okay? Put the links up, et cetera, if you want to go over there. Okay, again, Twitter is at EduTalk Radio. And I'm going to ask, first of all, Angelica, am I pronouncing your name right? It's Larry here, which is an easy name. Yours is harder.
Yes, no, it's great. You're doing a great job. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Okay, I'm trying here. I'm trying to remember my old Spanish from high school where the G's were H's and all that sort of thing.
That's right. But you got it. You nailed it.
Thanks. I appreciate that. And congratulations to you. This is a big deal. First Latina, first woman of color to lead the Rhode Island Department of Education. Congratulations. How long have you had
Thank
the post?
You.
You're welcome.
Well, it's been 18 months, and I'm really honored to be doing this work here in Rhode Island.
That's great. And I bet they're honored to have you as well. And, of course, that means that you started before the pandemic. All right, and then all of a sudden, like all of us, you in particular, we got stuck with the pandemic. It hit us, all right? So I want to just talk to you. And by the way, you were in New York before this. You were the, quote, deputy commissioner, okay, of the state's Office of Instructional Support, pre-K-12. Pre-K is so darn important, by the way, all right? And so now you're the commissioner of education in little old Rhode Island, okay? Tiny little Rhode Island, but the state with the longest name. Remember that? Do you know that one? Angelica, do you know that one?
Yes, I do.
Okay,
yes,
good.
I do.
Good, excellent. So, just so you know that, everybody, it's the Commonwealth of Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. That's the old name of the state. Okay, little state. It takes the entire state just to write that out. That's how small the state is. What can I tell you?
I love it, but I have to tell you.
Yes.
I love New England. I'm really excited to be here, and I really feel the warmth of New England. It's an amazing place.
I'm a Philadelphian by birth, and I feel the same exact way. I've been in New England now since 1990, and we just love it. Okay, it's just great. I'm up in Maine, by the way. My kids were raised in New Hampshire. I'm up in Maine. Okay, so we are New Englanders together. It is a great place, and even though we have a rough winter, I still love the place, and you're used to that. Are you from New York?
I am. I'm from New York City, yes.
Never heard of it. Where is that? There's some baseball teams down there, aren't there? I don't know.
That's right.
I'll move
on. Yes, there are. Unfortunately, I'm a Mets fan, so no controversy.
Well, I'm sorry about that. Do you need any therapy or anything while we're on the phone? I can help you.
I always root for the underdog.
Yeah, good. That's going to pay off in the world of education. See how that goes all the way around. It's just wonderful. I love it. Okay. There was a funny question that you wanted me to ask, which I was going to make a joke. How did you get to Rhode Island? And I was going to say you took Route 90 and then 395 down to Providence, right? That's the way you went.
That's right.
Yeah, I knew that. Okay.
That's right.
But what were your plans? This is interesting because you're the – I haven't asked this question. You had plans before we knew there was a pandemic for Rhode Island. And then the pandemic hit, and maybe the plans are the same. So what was the goals? The last 18 months you had goals, all right? Then the pandemic hit. What were the goals? Are they still the same, et cetera? Good.
Yes, they still are the same. When I came to Rhode Island, one of the most striking things was Providence school system. It's been underperforming for over 30 years. Mm. It's a place that has been in crisis. I brought in Johns Hopkins to do a review, and what they found,
excellent,
it was that one of the worst systems in the nation.
So, I have to say something. Johns Hopkins, the folks at Johns Hopkins, their Center on Educational Policy, are very close friends of ours here. Okay, we work with them all the time. And that is, I'm so glad you mentioned that. Okay, they work with us in our magazine, on our website, on the podcast. They are absolutely excellent if people want some great consulting work. Thank you. I hate to do that, but they're my good buddies. So you brought it up. Thank you so much. They're great.
No, they are great. And they gave us a picture of the landscape, and it was pretty grim. So we've been working on that. And then one of the interesting things, because we're Rhode Island and we're so small and we're next to Massachusetts, we're always comparing ourselves to Massachusetts. I'm sure Massachusetts doesn't feel that way, but we do here in Rhode Island. And
right.
The education system is very different, even though we have the same assessments, and our kids need to do better. We need to do better. We need to help the kids. We need to really focus in on equity in education and really ramping up what we're delivering. So that was the goal prior to the pandemic. And then the pandemic hit, and we have both things running concurrently. And what was interesting about the pandemic is that we all know that there are inequities in education always. You know, and we're pretty good at sweeping them under the rug. But when COVID came, it blew away that rug. So there is no sweeping anywhere. It's all out in the open, and we have to deal with it in a very different way. And part of that is really talking about it and addressing the issues head on. So we did a good job of the technology divide here. This is what's amazing about New England, right? We didn't say we can't do it. Okay, how are we going to do it? And people came out in droves, just even personal people that I met throughout, buying 15 laptops here, buying 20 here, making sure that every kid had the technology that they needed. That was pretty amazing to see. That's when it's great to be part of such a unified community.
Right. You are right. I have to say something on that. When I lived in New Hampshire, which is smaller than Maine, okay, I really enjoyed it because they were able to make things work because it's a small state and they get involved with the citizens and the citizens have access to the government. It's very simple access. I, just a normal schlep, met literally every governor on a first name basis while I lived there. Okay, that's how small it is. We called the attorney general's office. The attorney general answers the phone. All right. And it's the same thing in Rhode Island. The states are workable. All right. And I know there's not a lot of good friends down in Rhode Island. They are workable. All right. And things can happen. People call the commissioner of education. There'll be sometimes they call. OK. And Angelica will answer the phone herself. Hello, Angelica. May I help you? All right. It's that simple. It's an amazing place.
It
is. And you bring up New England. It's Yankee ingenuity. I had to write that down. It is Yankee ingenuity. We tend to make it work. Okay? It's that simple.
I have a
question for you. You know, you said that Providence, which is the major city in the state, as everybody knows, that Providence was having serious problems, challenges that you saw when you first got there. And this is pre-pandemic. Why? And they had to do with equity. I'm sure they had to do with the digital divide, et cetera, et cetera. Why do those things happen? Okay, you're trying to correct that. Okay, and I love you for that. Okay, but why is this continuing to happen? And Providence isn't the only one. Why was it there to begin? Didn't somebody see this? Hello?
I think they did, but I think part of the problem is the other beauty of Rhode Island is that sort of it's, this is what it's like here. That was what I kept hearing. This is what we do. This is what it's like.
Yeah.
And I think that for a long time, they have been let down. there's a beauty in being small, but there's also this challenge that exists that when politicians don't deliver or people in power don't deliver, there is this idea that they can't trust anyone. There's a lack of trust, and they don't continue to invest in the school system. And I don't mean just financially. I mean just invest in making sure that this is the best system possible. And to be the capital city, in order for us to attract businesses, to keep thriving, our school system has to be top-notch. And then there's a little bit of racism that we cannot ignore because it is primarily a black and brown system. And Providence is one of those places that people work here, they leave, and they sort of, you know, look at it in the rearview mirror. And then the people that live here struggle with the day-to-day and the situations and the economy. It's very different. It's a very different scenario. But it's something that we need to address. We need to talk about racism. We need to talk about the inequity. And we need to really make sure that we tackle these issues where they're not just talking points. Because in many places, it's just talking
Thank you.
Points.
And that's one of the things with our consortium, which I hope you will take a few minutes and join with us today. I would love that over at ace-ed.org. We're on the same wavelength here. Okay. As horrible as this – well, let me do two things. A, when George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis, okay, we all saw that. Okay. That was just raw racism. I don't care what anybody says. And as horrible as that was, you got Breonna Taylor, too, and some others – all of a sudden, and you said this before, it pulled away the curtain. It pulled away the curtain, okay? And, you know, we had to confront it. We still have to confront it and face it. Stuff's going on in Philadelphia just yesterday and today that's similar, okay?
That's right.
And all of a sudden we're faced with that sort of thing, all right? And then people ignoring it, okay? You mentioned that we just kind of let it go. Because – Providence, let me just use Providence as the example. Providence is the capital of the state. It reflects the quality of the state, okay? And if the schools aren't good, and it, probably your biggest district, and producing great kids, well-educated kids, okay, it's going to reflect upon the whole state. It's not that big a state, no matter how it is, okay? So
that's right.
People can't ignore it. Okay, and I'll tell you, the pandemic really. My joke is that we kicked the can down the road for a long, long time, and we found that at the end of the road was a cliff, and that was on November 13th. Okay, and we all fell off together, and now we got to climb back up together. You can use that, by the way. It's a great cliche. Okay, but it is. I made it up, but it's a great cliche. But the point is, all right, we're. All of a sudden, we're forced to face these issues, et cetera. And one of the issues we had to face, and talk to me about this digital, the digital divide, how did it sort itself out as you guys went to remote learning in Rhode Island?
So in March, when we saw what was happening, when we had to close down, we closed down for a week. We moved up the April vacation. We gave teachers a week off and everyone else to figure all this out. And one of the things we realized is that we had started the week before asking districts to create plans because we didn't know what was going to happen.
Yep.
And at that point, we realized that many of the districts were at 50% connectivity. The kids didn't have access or didn't have Wi-Fi in their house. And we went and polled every single family, every single school, and we realized that we needed to get computers. And we did. We shifted.
Yay.
One of the things that I was able to do was shift money over, which, you know, may or may not be allowed, but we did it. I shouldn't say that.
Yeah,
we just used it differently. Listen, we need to do what we need to do. And then
exactly.
We have an amazing governor. So I called the governor and
Governor
said,
Raimondo. Governor Raimondo. Yeah.
Yes. I need you to call all your friends. She has a lot of important friends. And she got companies to give everybody free hotspots and also on their phone, hotspots. So Verizon gave us hotspots. AT&T gave us hotspots. So everyone's cell phone now became a hotspot in the house. So that was pretty amazing. And Cox also gave free hotspots. It was pretty amazing. We really did a lot of hard work, but it's really about coming together and helping each other out. That's what it came down to.
Did you say Cox? Cox Communications?
Yes, Cox Communications. They were amazing.
Cox
Not only did they give us Wi-Fi.
Yeah, they were.
They
we work with them. Yeah, we work with them. They're big in trying to get digital equity to everybody. I want to give them kudos for that. Okay, they're not everywhere in the country because just by nature of the cable and the communications business. But where they are, they've done an absolutely excellent job. I'm glad you work with them. I'm glad you brought that up. That's really great stuff. And you're good to have a good governor. You're absolutely right. You know, you were able to pull that off, like all of us, I mean, in an emergency. Okay, and everybody, all the Rhode Islanders gathered. Everybody helped. All right. Why does it always take an emergency situation to get us to all work together and make this happen? So every kid has a digital device and a hotspot nearby. What? We were missing that before the pandemic, and like always say, the horror of the pandemic. But look at the good in some. It brought out the best in us in some cases.
Yeah, there's nothing like a crisis.
Yeah.
For people to stop thinking about themselves personally and think about the community at large. And I, you know, I lived that firsthand in 9/11 where the city came together.
Oh.
Now we've come together with this pandemic. And it really puts aside your personal beliefs, your personal interests, and we start thinking at a level of a community. And I think that's where we need to be with education. We really started thinking about the kids and how are they going to eat and how are things going to continue to happen? One of the things that we're seeing nationwide, but here also in Rhode Island, is the number of child abuse cases have gone down because we catch those things more widely in schools. So there's a lot of issues here. But one of the things that I'm really excited about is that we emerge as national leaders in terms of being able to get this done. Really, you know, there were many states that said, unfortunately, it's not equitable. We're just not going to do it. And our response was not equitable, so we have to do it, right? We have to. There is no way that we cannot and will not do this. And
You did good, and I got to tell you, I was going to congratulate you because you did literally set a national example, okay, on getting this done in March, okay, and Rhode Island deserves to be kind of congratulated on that. Did you ever think you'd be faced with a situation like this? I don't think anybody ever did. Just nutty.
No, no one. It keeps us all up at night, I have to tell you. All the chiefs meet together, and it's hard. It's hard, and every context is different. But one of the things that we've done, you'd like to hear this, the New England chiefs, we get together every Thursday morning at 7:30, and we share ideas, and we work together. So it's pretty amazing. It's something that we have, you know, because New England is different. It's hard to explain to other people. So we really look at what needs to happen across New England together and really work and share resources amongst ourselves.
Yeah, we are a section of the country in and of itself. I will admit that. Okay, we are. That's what I love about it, to tell you the truth. I just love it up here in Maine. And by the way, I'll give you some crazy news, my fellow New Englander. I'm looking out my window here in southern Maine, and it's snowing. It's October 28th. It's honest to God. I just looked out the window and it's snowing. Now it's not sticking, but it's snowing. Okay? What can I tell you? October 28th, everybody, you heard it here. Breaking news. It's snowing. I live in a little town called Cornish, Maine. You're kind of near Portland. Okay? It's snowing. What can I tell you? All right? Well, welcome to winter in New England, and it's not even winter yet. That's the bad news. All right, we'll just move on. All right, back to school. Where are we on back to school? Helica, where are we? In Rhode Island.
So we have, in Rhode Island, we gave parents a choice. We opened, our goal was to open up the schools, and we gave parents a choice whether they wanted to do digital or in person.
Yeah, that's good.
I think we have about 85% of our kids in person. We're really proud of that because that took an enormous amount of work. Enormous. So the schools are open. If parents want to send their kids, they are there. They are doing the right thing. We know that in-person education cannot be replaced. There's no way. It's not the same. Kids even tell me that. I met with high schoolers last week, and they said, you know, they're going in an A and a B day because of faith in this particular high school. You know, I was going to fail chemistry, but when I went in, the teacher was able to explain it a little differently, and I'm in a good place right now. So we hear it from the kids. The kids know. And we're seeing very little problems with students acting out. They're just happy to be back in the classroom. It's amazing.
Isn't that amazing? All the kids can't wait for summer vacation. When you cut it all off, they can't wait to go back in because that's where their friends are, and really they like learning.
That's right.
All right? They really do.
This just
proved that. We talked before, though, about the challenges of racism. You brought this up, and the challenges of kind of just pushing things under the carpet instead of facing them. And now we're back. And if you look at the equity question, the racism question, I guess social justice, if we can call it that, what are we doing now? And we've got this opportunity now. It's a strange time to really do something about it. What are you doing now to solve the equity problem, to solve the, I'll call it the racism challenge, et cetera? Okay? Because we don't want to be back to where we were before.
No, absolutely not. So we have to take lessons learned. And a couple of the things that we're doing here is we're changing our social studies standards. What the kids are learning has to change. They have to have a different perspective. It really needs to be different. Then the talking about it and calling it out. And one of the things that we learned was working with the adolescents, they really want to talk about race. They really want to unpack it. They don't want to follow in our footsteps. So for the first time, we were able to have a student summit statewide, even though we're small, but we had never done that. Small also means parochial, so everybody's in their own little space. And they basically made it very clear that they want to learn about racism, how they can combat it, and how their history is incorrect. So we're working with them to help us reframe what that looks like. And I think that's very important because this new generation is a lot more in tune with what's happening than any other. So we need to help them. We need to give them the tools to be able to unpack what's real and what's not. You know, now we're into this era of fake news, what's going on, what's not. So they need the tools so that they can help us lead. And it's a different way of looking at it. And the second piece is working really closely with the community. One of my pillars is engaged communities. And I really believe that the community can help us talk about this. Families have been failed for many years. When I talk to parents, they were failed. But there's also this idea that people need to fall in line. So now that rug has been pulled away, the carpet, it's what are we going to build in its place? And we can't go back. You're very right. We're not going back to what was in the past. We are in a place where we have to reimagine what education could look like. And this opportunity, you know, I met kids that have to work, right? They have to work. So they were missing school because they are construction workers, because they have to help pay rent for their families. So what are we doing? So let's have some flexibility. Let's see what we can do to really make sure that the kids are successful, not the way that we categorize success, but really success in the sense that they're going to be able to move forward, be leaders, be able to go to college, have choices.
Yeah.
People in poverty don't have choices. Our system doesn't create those kinds of choices. And I think that that's something that we really need to focus in as a nation.
Absolutely. Okay. Because poverty does not mean you're stupid. Poverty does not mean you can't do it. We have to show the kids the opportunities that are out there. You mentioned
something.
And I'm going to jump on it because I'm a former social studies teacher. Okay. Did you mention social studies a few minutes ago? I'm going to jump on that.
Did.
I think you did. Okay. I have to ask this. Okay. There has been, and by the way, I'm not against STEM, okay, science, technology, engineering, and math, but there has been a very, very strong emphasis, and Rhode Island, I know, has done a good job on this, on STEM over the past 15 years. Rightly so, okay? I'm not going to argue that, okay? But there's been such an emphasis, not just in Rhode Island, that we've let some of the other subjects go by the wayside. And one of them, if I may get on my soapbox, has been social studies and civics. Okay? And we are, in my opinion, we are paying the price for this, this 20-year mistake. Okay? And I go pre-K-12 on that, by the way. Okay? When you say there's going to be more of an emphasis on social studies, can you talk about that a little bit deeper?
Sure. So I'm glad
you
brought up civics. So we're going to require civics in order to graduate from our high school. Like we this is a non-negotiable for us now. Like we've seen our mistake. You're right about that. we're always trying to find what's going to be that magic thing. There is no magic bullet. This is about really learning, being really thoughtful, and history is what guides all of this, right? I think where we are as a nation today, we've learned some of these lessons in the past, but clearly not, because we haven't even been teaching it. And
that's
we need to also teach history from different lenses and perspectives. Right. And I think that that's something that we need to do. We are committed to that. We have this initiative going, and we are going to have new social studies standards by the end of the year. And we are going to require civics to graduate. That is really important to me. It's one of the most important things that we can do right now.
It really is. I assume you're familiar with the National Council of Social Studies. Are you?
Yes, I am.
Okay. And they're going to have their virtual conference coming up very shortly. Okay. And I think you'll enjoy it. You'll enjoy that. And I'm hoping they have a big, big turnout, because I'm finding that as the conferences move to virtual, more people are attending because they don't have to worry about airfare and hotels and food and all that.
Okay.
It's a less expensive way to get the same information. These are just some of the changes that are happening. I am thrilled you're doing more on social studies. I love that. Okay, I may tap into you. You know, we have our magazine, which is up online over at the website, and I would love to get somebody to tell me what you're doing in social studies and write it out, so our 150,000 circulation on the magazine and pre-K-12 can hear what you're doing. Can I get tap into you on that, Annalia? Someone?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh,
I would love it.
We would love that. You're going to hear from me later today. We're going to get that together. That's great, because to me, you've nailed it. And again, STEM is important, but the key is nothing happens. There are always social ramifications to science and technology. We don't build things, okay, and create things for the purpose of not using them. And if we don't understand how they're going to impact society, okay, we've got serious challenges there, and that's how the two come together. And that was Robert Oppenheimer's big challenge with creating the nuclear bomb, the atomic bomb. He recognized what we were unleashing upon humanity, and you have to understand that balance between society. I'm teaching you like I'm your social studies professor. You hear that, everybody? I don't mean to do that. Yeah,
That's awesome.
But it's true. It's true. And I'm so glad that you're striking that balance again across the state and making it happen. Okay? It's just great. So what's the very next step? Is it emphasis on social studies? Or what's the very next step as we're now in October of the craziest school year ever?
Well, the very next step is, one, you mentioned the snow. So getting ready for the snow.
No snow days, kids.
Yeah, but getting HEPA filters into the classroom because we can't use the fans anymore. Making sure that we're ready for the winter months. But also, I think it's also what's happening with our multilingual learners, with our students that are differently abled. What are the things that we're going to put in the forefront? We are releasing our blueprint for multilingual learner success for the state. We brought together not just educators, but also parents, students, politicians. And I don't normally do that, but I thought it was really important, because as they start voting and making decisions, they need to understand and commit to making sure that these kids are seen, heard, and put in the forefront. So they were part of the work session, not just coming in and shaking hands, but really doing the hard work. And they did participate. And I think that's how we move forward. We can't have these divided systems with different priorities. Education has to be everyone's priority.
That's right. And it has to work for everyone right across the board, the entire state, and it's doable.
That's right.
It is doable.
That's right.
You are something. You are really something. Is it doctor? Or are you Dr. Infante Green, or are you – what
no,
are
I'm
you,
not.
Commissioner?
I'm
You're not.
No,
well, I can give you a doctorate from the University of Larry this afternoon, because you're doing such a good job down there. There you go. It's a 140 character thesis. That's all you have to do. It's a Twitter thing. Okay. No, I'm just kidding. Okay. You are really a firebrand down there in Helicon. I'm going to be in touch with you. Okay. Is that okay?
Absolutely. I would welcome that.
I'm going to welcome it too. Right. We're gonna get the word out about all the great things you're doing down there in that little bit of powerhouse. The little engine that could. I got to tell you, Rhode Island, everybody. It's true. Commissioner Angelica Infante Green, okay, we'll be in touch. Thank you so much. This was wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I'll be there. I'll be back to you. Bye-bye. Well, was she something or what? Okay. Incredible. Okay. She's got that. I love her. All right. She's great. That social studies thing hit home. All right. Just made sense in the whole equity thing. We're gonna figure this out. All right. Just great stuff. Okay. We're going to archive the show at educate. Oh, no, we're not. We're going to archive it at ace-ed.org. We used to archive it at the other place. Now it's at ace-ed.org, our equity consortium. Okay, and our magazine's over there. We're going to get Angelica Turait in there. Okay, it's going to be just great and learn more. Get the word of Rhode Island out to a lot more people via the magazine than listen to these podcasts. It's really great. Check out what we do. Join with us. It's all free over at ace-ed.org, the American Consortium for Equity and Education. I'm Larry Jacobs. Thank you.